Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the podcast to which all roads lead. My name is Patrick Bromley. I'm joined tonight for a very, very special discussion of Fast and Furious 6 by one of the film's stars, Vin Diesel.
That's right.
Vin, how are you?
How are you?
Loved your work in A Man Apart. Loved your work in Find Me Guilty. Loved it.
Thank you. I want you to ask me questions that only have answers where I can answer questions back to you.
Okay,
to make myself seem
cooler. Yeah. Okay. What was it like working on Fast and Furious 6?
Why don't you tell me?
That's very good, Riddick.
Thank you. I got eye shine all over the place.
Sitting next to Vin Diesel is Doug.
Hey, everyone. I'm Doug.
Welcome back.
Doug O'Connor, former FBI agent, former police, disgraced police officer.
Turned master criminal.
So he was a cop in the first couple.
Yeah, in the first one.
In the first one.
By the second one, he was...
Right. Okay, so a cop, he breaks the law, turns his badge in.
Right.
Isn't in the second one.
Right. Kind of a criminal.
Misses the third one. In the fourth one...
FBI agent.
Because that's what they do. They hire...
Okay, but to be fair, he does say, like, he's really good at lying. And that's why they recruited him. That's a line of dialogue.
One of your favorite lines of dialogue in Old School... That's right, Old School.
Yeah, yeah.
Is where Craig Kilborn is dating the female lead. And he's a jerk. He's an asshole. And we're like, why is she with him? She should be with Luke Wilson. And at the end... Spoilers
for Old School.
She breaks up with Craig Kilborn and goes back to Luke Wilson.
Off screen.
And he's off screen, right. And Luke Wilson's like, what happened to Craig Kilborn? And she says, Patrick?
I caught him red-handed, and let's just say it wasn't pretty.
And it's like...
That's as much explanation as we receive.
I could hear...
For how that resolved.
The screenwriter and director, like, slapping the dust off their hands. Like, and that's the end of that. So, yeah. So he lies a lot, so he's an FBI agent.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then by part five, he's a master criminal.
I'm not sure why we're talking about Fast and Furious
You're
franchise.
Looking to the past. Let's look to the future.
No, because we're talking about Epic, the other movie that came out today, right?
Hangover Part 3. Epic conclusion to the Wolfpack trilogy.
That's right. It's a cartoon, right?
When you said epic, you meant epic conclusion.
Epic conclusion. I didn't think.
Remember, you can find our website at fthismovie.net. The F stands for Fast and Furious. You should like us on Facebook, and you should follow us on Twitter. We're at fthismovie.
We're almost at 1,000, so sign up now. You could be the one that breaks our 1K cherry.
Breaks Twitter. You'll break our Twitter. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
Break cherries or pop cherries? You'd pop our 1K
I've done neither.
I've
been with only sluts. You can
Your wife's right behind you, isn't she?
Email us the ghost of my wife. Those are the only people that stand right behind you. It's
right.
Like, it got cold because there's a ghost behind
because
you.
Because of Bill Cosby.
Good ghost.
Ghost dad.
Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. If you like our show, please take the time to leave us a positive star rating or a positive review. Thank you to everybody who's taken the time to do that. That's super nice. It helps raise the visibility of our show. It'll help new people find the show, so we really appreciate it. And you can find us on DVD Verdict by going to dvdverdict.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Thanks to Michael Staley, everybody at DVD Verdict, for hosting our show there. And while you're there, you should check out one of the tens of thousands of reviews at dvdverdict.com.
Tens of thousands of other podcasts.
They're great, and thank you to everybody at DVD Verdict.
What day does our podcast drop?
It kind of changes. Traditionally, I think it's Thursdays, but it changes.
Okay.
So you can check any day. And there's a new podcast at DVD Verdict every day. Not always ours, but you should check them all out.
Well, we've, without fail,
yeah.
I think there's been one, maybe 2 weeks in the entire run of F This Movie where you haven't put a podcast out every single week.
Yeah, we're devoted. We're devoted. 2 years ago, I believe, you and I discussed Fast Five. So it only made sense for you to come back to talk Fast and Furious 6.
It only makes
sense. I feel like all roads lead to this.
I read your write-up.
Yeah.
About why you love the franchise.
Well, just trying to kind of recap, like, how did I get so excited about Fast and Furious 6?
And I could not disagree more.
Do tell!
The movie is the worst. I'm just kidding. It's fine. It's great. It's fun, right?
We're going to get to that. Okay. We'll get to there.
All
just
right.
Like Han, we'll get to Tokyo. We'll get there.
Spoilers for the end of Fast and Furious.
Spoilers for Tokyo Drift.
Is he DK?
No, he's not DK.
Well, who the hell is DK?
DK is Drift King.
Interesting. I could have gone there.
Or Doug's Knuts.
thank you.
So we're going to talk about Fast and Furious 6, shortly. We'll try and talk spoiler-free for a little while in case you haven't seen it and you need us to push you over the edge to see the sixth installment in a series that you haven't been keeping up
really
with.
Not too many spoilers.
Not really. Yeah. I wouldn't say, but
straight. You know what you're getting with this.
If you haven't seen the previous five, I'm not saying you wouldn't enjoy part six, but I don't know why you would see part six because it's really just fan service at this point. But before we get to Fast and Furious 6, Douglas,
yes,
have you seen anything Fast or Furious lately?
Neither. Next, I was in California this past weekend for my sister-in-law's wedding.
Always with, like, the life story. Every time I'm like, have you seen a movie? You're like, well, I was born. And then you stop. And I'm like, I know you were born. We're talking. There's a ghost behind you.
I came back from California by myself. My wife and child stayed there for a week. One night.
Are you guys having some problems?
I don't want to go there, Patrick. Please.
She won't see Fast and Furious 6. We're two different people.
One night, I was home alone. It was late, and I'm like, oh, what's on HBO? And I put on Chernobyl Diaries. That was a mistake, because that movie
I have to defend it.
You're making Home Alone jokes?
I'm really sorry, because, yeah, I should have skipped ahead right to Chernobyl Diaries.
Listen. Are you listening? My point was, I was going to maybe tape it first for October. For Scary Movie Month. Because what I like to do is, like, find the horror movies that are released and save them and not watch them. So, here's the caveat. I didn't see all of Chernobyl Diaries because it looks like a piece of shit. But I definitely had enough on where I was scared to walk down the hall for fear. Well, I don't know if you know this. I live next to Chernobyl.
I was going to say, do you live in a nuclear plant?
I live in the Three Mile Island. So, spoilers for Chernobyl Diaries. I will watch you. That's not a spoiler.
Chernobyl Diaries, I don't know much about. I saw the trailer, and I felt like this is the point at which found footage horror breaks, yeah, right? No, like,
we're out of
ideas if we're going to 3 Mile.
I maybe saw 40 minutes of it. And in that 40 minutes, the only things that were, like, scary or clever was the volume at which the scares came. And it's effective. You can't say that loud things aren't,
right,
like, jarring.
Right.
Not to say they're scary. They're jarring. They're like, bah! Especially when you're by yourself and your wife is, like, you know, out in a different state because she's mad at you. it's just like, it's garbage, and I'm like, I don't know. There's so much bad horror.
I have a hard time, and I can accept a lot, as we'll learn as we talk about Fast and Furious 6, but, like, even the premise, they're like, yeah, man, we're going to go to Chernobyl. Like, is this something that young people
do? It's all a bunch of Americans,
too,
this way. Right? Yeah, like, it's horrible.
So, no spring break. Let's go to Chernobyl.
Kind of in the same vein of talking about a horror, I'm kind of, it's weird, we're closer to this year's October than last year's October.
That's crazy.
We're over the hump of the halfway point between Scary Movie Month.
Yikes.
And I'm just now starting to get, like, a little
That's
excited
the
about
weather got cold again in Chicago.
It was
hot, and then it dropped to, like, 50 degrees. Maybe. And you're like, ooh, it feels like fall.
Right. So
I'm going to watch Chernobyl Diaries.
I'm going to watch, like, hundreds of horror movies.
Paranormal Activity 4.
Oh, I saw some of that, too.
Garbage.
Yeah, horrible.
Not even an attempt to have a scare in that movie.
No. Anyway, that's such a lame entry. I rewatched the 2009 Star Trek.
Sure.
Because last night I also saw the 2013 Star Trek Into Darkness.
Sure.
And I liked it. It's fine. You've talked about Star Trek Into Darkness ad nauseum.
Yeah, we've talked it to death this
week.
With
Mike and Adam Beta. And if you want to hear Patrick's opinions, please download that podcast. Please stream it. Please check it out. I'm probably side more with the Mike Adam side of it than you. But it was fine. I think it was flawed, but I also think 2009 was flawed. And I think that...
Like as a year?
Yeah, the whole year was kind of like, I'm pulling my
thumb down.
You're
like, all right, Obama. Show me what you got.
Because of death camps for grandparents and stuff. No, death... What's the stupid thing that came out? Is it death? Death panels.
Death panels, yeah.
Panel. Time for more panel. Death panel. So I watched 2013's Star Trek Into Darkness, and it's fun. I liked it. I enjoyed myself during it. It's fun. I like all the characters. I like the world. I think Mike mentioned that in the podcast. I didn't dislike it as much as you do. I think you're more disappointed in it than...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's you just fine. Wanted it to
it's
be
just, yeah, better. It definitely disappointed me.
So yeah, and then I listened to your podcast, and I was gripping my steering wheel ever so tight.
Oh my gosh, so angry. I was so angry.
Why is he so negative?
Rank, I try not to be. Rank the big summer movies thus far. Iron Man 3, Star Trek Into Darkness, Fast and Furious 6.
That's crazy. It's funny because it's I think crazy. That Iron Man 3, in my mind, Iron Man 3 and Star Trek Into Darkness are kind of like... very much would occupy the same space in my mind. However, yeah. I did wake up this morning thinking about Star Trek. It was like the first thought in my mind.
I do that every day, but not Star Trek Into Darkness.
I'm
like more into darkness.
Can you rank those movies?
I don't know. Probably not. Because there's... I don't know. I just wanted you to do it. There's one I enjoyed more than the other two, but it's not a very good movie.
I think I know where you're going with this. Yeah, they're all fine.
It just has to do with expectations.
They're all fine. They're all fine. They're all one, one, one. Tied for first.
Welcome back to this movie. We refuse to take a position.
No, I took a position. Iron Man 3 podcast.
You said you liked 2 better. Which I thought would blow up in your face a little bit more, but people seem to let that go.
Some people...
I want to bring it up again, so that who didn't experience the proper outrage at that point
that podcast
can now get outraged.
Got us a person in the comment section unsubscribing from us.
That is true.
I'm not sure why, aside from our negativity for a movie we all liked. Like, we like this movie. You're too negative.
To be fair, I retroactively did not like Dark Knight Rises.
Nice.
I saw a movie that I really didn't like. That we could talk about. This weekend's other big release, previously mentioned, not epic, I saw The Hangover Part 3.
Oh, giraffe-icide.
It is, yeah, a lot of giraffe death. It's not a good movie. It's fascinating. Because the first Hangover is fine, right? Like, yeah. It's wildly overpraised, but I laughed, and there's things to like about that movie.
Yeah.
The second Hangover... is lazy to sort of an insulting degree. They literally just changed the setting and some of the words, but all of the beats are identical.
Right.
And it's almost like, was this an experiment or was this just lazy? And so a lot of people didn't like Hangover 3. And I have this theory. Hangover 2.
Yeah.
So I have this theory that Todd Phillips took that, I don't know, personally and was like, I'll show you assholes. And so he made this movie that is not a comedy. Every joke in the movie is in the trailer. And I don't mean to say, like, there's all these jokes and they're not funny. Literally, the jokes that are in the trailer, that's it. Those are the jokes in the movie. The rest of the running time is made up with expository dialogue, violence, and, like, weird things that I guess we're supposed to, like, be advancing the characters. It's a fascinating non-movie that I feel like is almost an act of aggression by Todd Phillips. Like,
I heard that...
to deliberately not satisfy the audience. But at the same time, there's all this weird fan service. Like, here's Heather Graham again. The baby who played the baby is now 4 and in the movie. And they flash back to shots from the first 2 movies. And a girl in the audience was like, oh. Like, she was happy to be taken down memory lane with the wolf pack.
See? It's sweet.
It's insane.
I heard not a rumor, but I heard that one of the last shots is like Todd Phillips' like message to critics or something. Am I misinterpreting something? Am I misunderstanding something?
Not that I can think of, but...
I read it. I haven't seen the movie.
I don't remember the last shot being a guy giving 2 middle fingers.
I mean, that's what I... almost right, like what I took away from the thing I read. You know what's funny is I had no... Hangover 1, just The Hangover.
Yeah, just The Hangover.
It's fine, and it's fun, and it's lighthearted. In a lot of ways. In some ways, it's not.
In some ways, it's mean-spirited.
In some ways, it's very, mean. But in some ways, it's just goofy and, and silly, and Zach Galifianakis' character isn't like... he's just kind of sweetly retarded goofball.
Right.
And I didn't have any desire to, like, revisit these characters. And when Hangover 2 came out, I skipped it. I saw it eventually on HBO.
Yeah.
And I remember kind of, like, half-watching it, like, I don't care enough to even, like, give this my full attention. And they announced a third one, and what I heard was that they were going to, like, make it better. It's better than the second one. And
they made it different from the second one. Okay. Like, it's not just a repeat of the first movie, but the way that it tries to, like, close all these threads makes no sense. And again,
Did Todd Phillips write it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And directed. And maybe he just needs to stop making comedies.
Is he licking Amy Smart's toes?
He has that stupid cameo again. Like, does anybody feel like, except besides Todd Phillips, does anybody feel like every Todd Phillips movie needs to have that cameo?
Listen, I know
he's, in this one, spoilers for Todd Phillips' cameo in The Hangover Part 3, he's like paying a hooker. Like, that's it.
I know in Psycho, I'm waiting to see Alfred Hitchcock at the bus stop. I know in Rope, he's in a picture. I know in a lot of... I'm waiting for those things. So maybe there are people out there that, like,
in
think of glasses.
Frenzy, he's on the back of a potato truck.
Deep Frenzy cut.
Thank you. Uh-huh. That's how I roll with my Frenzy references.
Well,
I liked Road Trip. Like, I think that's a fine
movie. Yeah, Road Trip is fine.
Movie. I actually really like Old School. I think that's actually really... And I haven't watched it lately.
This is the second time we've brought Old School on a Fast
but I,
and Furious
but I,
podcast.
But I like that movie. And, And The Hangover is fine. I think Todd Phillips needs to stop making comedies because, again, in the first movie, like, I say what you will about Bradley Cooper. I recognize he's good at playing a douche, and a lot of people think that's because he is a douche. I don't know that I feel that way, but...
I don't think he is.
He gives my favorite performance in the first Hangover. Like, I think he's so great at being just an asshole. Like, and I think he really embraces that and runs with it. So that's the joke of his character, that he's just a cock. And then Zach Galifianakis obviously is from another planet, and that's
and
the
even
joke
more
of his
so
character.
Now, right? Like,
oh,
I mean,
way
now,
more so.
Now
he can't even pronounce the word pornography now, and I guess we're supposed to laugh because he mispronounces it. And then the Ed Helms character, the joke is, like, he's trying to be this straight guy, and all this bad stuff happens to him. He gets out of control when he drinks or whatever. And so there's a joke, sort of, for each main character in the first Hangover.
What about Doug?
Doug is missing in every movie.
I'm missing right now.
You get to this movie, Zach Galifianakis has, like, some jokes. Ed Helms, zero joke. There's not a joke about his character. His character doesn't make jokes. Same with Bradley Cooper. They're just there to, like, move a plot along. So any laughs that there may be come from Zach Galifianakis and Ken Jeong.
Wow.
It is the Ken Jeong show.
Ugh.
Most of the movie is devoted to Ken Jeong.
I will be honest right now. I am not a huge Ken Jeong fan.
Nor should you be.
I think that he can serve a purpose. I like him somewhat on Community. Or I did, before Community kind of shit the bed. So obviously on that TV show, he's okay. But I like it when he's not being an asshole, when he's kind of just being, like, funny.
Right.
Not, he doesn't need to be, like, a smarmy, because he doesn't, he's not a good actor.
No.
He can't pull anything off.
And he needs to be used in very small doses.
Yeah.
Very small. And boy, is he not in The Hangover Part 3. I was just amazed. When it ended, I suddenly was thinking way fondly of the first Hangover, because I thought... Boy, even if you didn't like that movie, there are a lot of jokes in it. There's a lot of things that you're supposed to find funny, and there's maybe 10 total in Hangover Part 3.
And you're saying it's not just that jokes fall flat, or they're trying to make a joke?
The jokes that are there do fall flat, but no. What I'm saying is they're spaced out, so there's 10 total in the movie. It's very weird.
So we will not be doing a podcast on The Hangover Part 3 because you pretty much said it all right now.
I think so. I don't know. I could complain about it some more, but
would
be too negative.
F that movie, like, or F comma that movie.
Oh, interesting.
The former, I think.
The former, yeah, definitely. Like, definitely. Fuck, and otherwise, really, I've just been rewatching the first... I rewatched the first five Fast and Furious movies.
Nice.
Again, which it's so
even
weird.
Even
Tokyo
Drift.
Yeah. Oh, you have to. We've been around long enough that, like, I did this once before when we did Fast Five. Like, I watched them up to that point, and now we're still...
Have you watched...
It's still a show.
Any of those movies aside from Fast Five? Because obviously I think you probably have watched that since it came on DVD.
In pieces, like on HBO. But no, I never watched it beginning to end.
So you have... Now. I'm assuming you haven't then watched the entire series? Okay.
No.
Yeah.
This was the first time I rewatched any of them since Fast Five when we did that podcast. And my feelings about them are still the same. I still like the first one. I still really like the second one. It's idiotic. Tokyo Drift is whatever. It's not for me. I think the fourth one is still the worst in the series, and Fast Five is the best.
The fourth one's in Mexico with the drug cartel, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I don't even remember that one.
It's
not
good.
This isn't a spoiler. Well, I won't say that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's get into Fast and Furious 6.
Why don't you get into it?
Nice. Thanks, Vin. I will.
I'm not hiding. There are so many things, just real quick, about the Vin Diesel character. Patrick made a comment a long time ago. I'm not sure if it was on the podcast or just in my head, as I'm kind of hearing Patrick's voice 24 hours a day, that in the trailer for the movie, Vin Diesel never says anything that isn't the coolest thing any character in the room can possibly say. Every mannerism is designed to be cool. The only problem is, Vin Diesel is a melting wax figure of uncoolness. Like, he's not as strong as the other people. He's got a weird double chin and no charisma. And whenever someone says something, these are not exact examples, but just approximations. This is the trailer where The Rock goes, "You weren't hard to find."
Yeah.
And he says, "I wasn't hiding." Every single thing he says is like that. And it's right. I just wish it was a different.
It's annoying the way he says it. It's annoying the short staccato dialogue, but it's also annoying that, like, oh, because if he was hiding, The Rock never would have found it. I just hate that, like, Diesel always, we're going to be spoiling, not Fast and Furious 6 yet, we will, but we'll announce spoilers, but you should know that in the course of this conversation, we will be spoiling the previous 5 movies, because this is the 6th movie, like, we have to talk about the plot developments that got us to this point.
And by the way, this movie has a plot.
I remember hating that even, I think it was Fast 5. It was Fast 5. That Paul Walker and Vin Diesel race again, and Paul Walker wins, and it's like, yay, finally, some vindication for Paul Walker, who has become the MVP of this series.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I don't know, Tyrese might actually be the MVP, but Paul Walker has become way more enjoyable over the course of the series, and it's like, yay, he won, finally, and then you find out, like, oh, Vin Diesel let him win.
Yeah,
he can't. And I just hate the deification of Dominic Toretto.
No, and now I'm quoting Vin Diesel here. He's Superman.
He is the weakest aspect of the last movie and this movie. I don't feel that way about the first movie. I think he works in the first movie. I don't have a problem with him in the first movie.
The movies drip a lot of machismo, however you pronounce it in your regional dialect. The movies drip this bro, macho, whatever.
Right.
And it's so funny because sometimes, like, you want a character to say thank you, or you want a character to say, like, good to see you, but they never will, ever. It's always going to be like, I never thought I'd trust a cop or a criminal. Silence, right, walk away.
Right, that's how we say goodbye. Every other guy in the movie, for as macho as they sort of are, they all have a sense of humor about themselves.
Yeah.
Like, so Paul Walker can make a joke at his expense about being a pretty blonde, and Tyrese is constantly the butt of the joke, and, like, they don't have to be awesome all the time, but Vin Diesel is only ever awesome.
By the way, I feel like we're going down this Vin Diesel rabbit hole. Let's talk about the movie in general terms for a bit, because I want to hear what you... Did you like Fast and Furious 6?
I had a great time.
There you go. So we're not being negative. The point is that we like the movie. It is the dumbest, funnest movie I've seen in a long time.
It is beyond ridiculous.
It is so stupid.
And
But you cannot have more fun laughing with it, because I think it kind of knows what it is.
Oh, I definitely think
Vin Diesel doesn't, you know. But I think that's what I'm saying. Like, a lot of aspects, it knows what it's doing. It knows what it's trying to be.
Yes.
But it is so stupid and dumb that you're just like, I'm like, if I was watching this, I might be embarrassed to watch it with, like, a person who didn't know my personality. Like, I'd have to explain, I get it, like, this is fun, right? Because it is so fun. It is so silly and stupid and fun.
They, you know, by the time they got to Fast 5, they kind of figured out, like, and we did a whole show on Fast 5, so I won't spend too much time on that. But
how long is that show?
It's as long as the movie. We talked about it a lot, but they really kind of figured out a formula that they brought back everybody from the previous movies. They turned it into this big Ocean's 11 heist movie, and it's like, yeah, this is fun. I don't care about street racing, and even if I did, I wouldn't care about it a fifth time.
Sure.
So let's have them decide to rip off this drug lord and steal a bank vault, and they have a clear goal, and they all come together, and they all have a special skill set, and they really figured out how to make that a really entertaining movie that I think really works, and I think opens up the series to a new audience. I think Fast 5 could work to an audience outside of the franchise. I really do. I don't know that I think that about Fast and Furious 6. Like, I think not only is the story very much sort of fan service oriented, like, you really have to be following along to care about this story at all.
This isn't a spoiler, but Michelle, this is in the trailers, and
it was revealed at the end of Fast 5.
That Michelle Rodriguez, who had previously been killed in 4?
4.
to make Avatar, right?
Basically, yeah.
Right. So Michelle Rodriguez, whose character's name is Letty, was killed in 4. At the end of Fast 5, it's revealed she's alive. So this movie reunites Letty with Vin Diesel.
And that's sort of the narrative through line of the movie.
Exactly.
Like, we have to get Letty back.
So the point is, like you said, Fast 5 could be for anyone. This movie, like, you need to know why Letty is important to...
Lots of even just little inside jokes or little character things that pay off only if you've been paying attention, you know. Having said that, I mean, I think you also have to understand the spirit of the movie, because if you come into this cold, it's the most preposterous movie you've ever seen in your life, and you can't go along with it. But if you've built up to this point, if you've seen Fast 5, which definitely pushes things, and then they get to 6 and they're just like, okay, let's go all out. And I actually worry, because, you know, they plan to continue the series, not with Justin Lin, who directed the last 4 movies. I don't think they can go bigger, but like, that's the only place I want to see the movie go. I don't think they can go bigger. This movie is beyond ridiculous. For them to go back small, you know, feels like a step backwards, but like, truly, how can they go bigger or dumber than Fast and Furious 6?
Yeah. It's interesting, because something you said about Fast 5, and I think that obviously takes place in the previous movies too, is that the caper or the heist that they pull isn't a big... I think in the first couple movies...
In the first movie, they're stealing DVD players off a truck.
Right. So obviously they're just like petty criminals, and then it builds and builds and builds where they end up stealing their bank vault. Yeah. But even that seems small. To some extent.
Yeah, compared to
this one.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking, so what the next step would be, would they have to, like, save the president, who's Jamie Foxx?
I want them to go into outer space. Like, for real, the trajectory they're on, if by Fast and Furious 9 they're in space, I'm along for the...
Like, you are buying a ticket.
I really am.
You're like, bring Fandango.
Because that's the only place they can go. It's crazy, and... The way that the series has evolved, again, the first movie is like, it's a cop and some criminals, and it's played out on the streets of Los Angeles. The shit they do in this movie, they're all superheroes, and I've heard, I've read more than one review, or at least a piece of reviews, because I did try and stay away, that compare this movie to The Avengers, where it's like, it's this team movie, and they all have superpowers.
They really do.
And it's ridiculous. Like, the fact that Dwayne Johnson, who plays this cop, and he comes back from Fast 5, like, he turns to them to bring down essentially a terrorist. Like, they're just thieves, right? Why is he turning to that? And they've become, like, they're the A-team now.
Oh,
you know? Like,
it's so funny. One of the first scenes is what you're talking about. It's where The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, like, they know that they're hunting this guy named Shaw. I think Owen Shaw.
That sounds right.
So Shaw is this mastermind criminal, former SAS, like, you know, he's the perfect, he's four steps ahead of you all the time. He's a super villain, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So
super
it's...
Super boring villain.
It's Dwayne Johnson and Gina Carano is the FBI, or not FBI, I don't know, DDS or something, some made up,
they're
whatever.
Doctors of dental surgery?
I think they're dentists. That it's only the two of them are hunting this guy, by the way. That's part of it, too.
Right.
The first scene takes place in Russia, where, like, there's a heist in Russia. So there's a great sweeping shot of Moscow. And
it says Russia on the screen.
Right. Thank you. I want them to say the names of the cars. I know that's such a weird thing to say right now, because I'm like, what are these cars they're driving? Because it's like they've gotten to a point also in the movie, kind of a sidebar. Because I do like cars. I'm not a gearhead, but I'm a car guy. I like cars a lot. I used to have an Avanti. No big deal. Anyway, but I want it, like, they've gone through all these cars. I want to know, like, this car is crazy looking. What is this car? Anyway, so they're in Moscow. A truck heist just happened, and two Americans walk up, and, like, we're in charge of the scene now. And it's like, what world does this exist? Oh, the 6th Fast and Furious movie. I'm on board.
Exactly.
And then the next scene is where Dwayne Johnson says, we need to hunt wolves. You need to hunt wolves or find
the wolf pack.
Wolves needs to hunt wolves, and we got to go hunting. And he calls up criminals.
Yeah.
Because they stole money in Brazil.
He calls Dominic and says, like, we need your team. And so then we get this sequence where he calls the team and the team comes back together.
It is so fun. Everything I described sounds like the dumbest thing in the world to you, and it is.
I think Fast 5 works better sort of as a movie. I think the dialogue is generally better. I think the characterization is a little bit better. I think the storyline is clearer. Like,
by the way, Fast Five is like, that's the thing.
I'm just saying.
I agree. Yeah. I completely agree. But that's like, that's the movie. That's the better cinema.
This is
just ridiculous.
Because this is. But what this does is take a lot of the best parts of Fast Five and do mostly that. I mean, there are stretches of this movie where I won't say it's slow, but dialogue is not the movie's strong suit. So when there's long stretches of like, okay, guys, this is all just exposition, it's not as good. But, you know, Fast Five has a couple really good action set pieces. They're stealing the cars off the train at the beginning, and there's that great chase at the end where they're dragging the vault. This movie has like five or six of those. It has some amazing set pieces.
I like the movie had this, and this is kind of a nitpick complaint. They have this base in London, like their lair,
right,
in London,
and they have just all their dozens of computer screens.
It's just that
Ludacris knows how to operate.
He's blocking cell phone signals,
and that's the thing. It's like they set it up with just this throwaway. I caught him red-handed, and it wasn't pretty. It's like Dwayne Johnson basically just says like, "Yeah, I'll get you whatever you need."
Yeah,
and then we just accept that Ludacris, he's the tech guy, so he knows how to do it all.
So you got this lair where they're all hanging out, and like all these action set pieces. It literally is them, like, them in the lair, we need to go to the set piece, and they come back to the lair. And it's where
that's the structure of the movie.
Almost every scene in the lair ends with, like, we gotta pay this guy a visit. We gotta bust some heads. Who's with me?
And a lot of times, and Doug and I kind of joked this with one another during the movie, a lot of times the set piece just brings us back to where we were, without spoiling anything, brings us back to exactly where we were before the set piece, you know?
Right.
It's like, we chase a guy, and then
he gets away,
and we got no new information, so let's try this angle. Like, this person will know how to find Shaw. And that's the problem, too, is, like, we understand who Shaw is, sort of. Like, he wants to make a bomb and then sell it. Again, this is all sort of thrown away. Like, he's dangerous because he's stealing parts to make a super bomb, and then he's going to sell it.
For $1 billion.
And it's just like, so his plan doesn't totally make sense. And this whole, like, bring him down doesn't totally make sense. And it's always just like, we got to find him. And we can't find him. And yet they constantly find him.
Right.
But, like,
he's not hiding.
He gets away.
Oh, that's Vin Diesel. Sorry.
And not to go back to Fast Five, but again, it was just like clear stakes. It was like, we're going to rip off this money. Like, he's got 10 different locations and we're going to hit each one. You know, it was like, it made more sense in this movie. It kind of doesn't, but
it doesn't matter in this movie.
You don't care.
The point is, like, when does the tank drive on the highway? When is the giant plane that's a real plane that is like the biggest thing in the world? When does that almost land on my car? Like, that's what I'm waiting for in this movie.
Yeah. I had said, I think on the Fast Five podcast, that I did a lot of laughing in that movie in this way that, like, I laugh when I'm excited because something's crazy and, like, I've never seen that before and I do this laugh. And I did that a couple times in Fast Five. I did that a ton in this movie. And we saw it with a pretty crowded audience on opening day. And these movies are fascinating because they bring out people who never go to the movies. Like,
it was such a weird mix of people, too.
People only come out to see these movies, and I do think a lot of that has to do with sort of the diversity of the cast. And obviously there's a car culture, and the movies are popular. They're on the 6-1, but I think the diversity plays a big part of it because the audience was way more diverse than a lot of movies.
Yeah, I saw some older people, too, like gray-haired people.
And kids. Well, it's just, these movies are
ridiculous
for everyone.
The kids should not be there, especially the one that cried during the really sad parts.
They were so primed to like this movie that they were cracking up right off the bat at like the movie's jokes. And the movie's jokes, for the most part, aren't funny.
No.
The lines that are supposed to be funny aren't funny. I will admit that there are a lot of like kind of throwaway jokes, most of them from like Tyrese, that are genuinely funny. Like when the movie goes for a laugh, it can be funny.
Organic and genuine, and they're funny and they're subtle.
Right.
And the jokes that are more on hit the nail on the head, this one guy behind us wouldn't stop. He was, like, laughing. Yeah. Like, he, like, had a
it laugh. The movie worked for him. So what my point is that the rest of the audience is laughing at that stuff, and then Doug and I would tend to laugh because they were laughing, and we're just like, where are we? This
yeah.
But we laughed a ton, too, but more yeah. so when, like, people jump from one car to another
because you a laugh lot of things, out yeah. of
excitement.
I want to say in the trailer also had two things that are featured prominently in the movie of people leaping from car to car.
There's a ton of it.
Yeah.
Almost every character in this movie jumps from one moving thing to another moving thing.
They are, you know, the more I think about the Avengers thing, they are superheroes. Like, they yeah. don't get hurt. No. They don't, like...
No.
Yeah.
But that's, again, I'm okay with that, like, at this point. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm willing to go with that.
I think your A-Team comparison's pretty apt also, because they really are. And even going back to the A-Team TV show, where, like... If anyone's a fan, I watched it all the time in the 80s. No one ever got hurt. Bullets were shot, right. and people had guns,
right.
and cars flipped, but no one ever got killed,
yeah.
and no one ever got hurt. They always, like, walked out and shook their fists right. at the A-Team. This movie has a lot of that, although they have to raise the stakes, so the villain kills thousands of people, yeah. runs over people in cars, yeah, which, by the way, that was a real tank running over real cars. That was not CGI.
That sequence is so great.
But I did notice that, like, in one... I want to say two, now correct me if I'm wrong, aside from maybe some ancillary incidental deaths,
yeah.
only two of the crew of the Fast and Furious, like, home team killed people. One of them was Gal Gadot or Gadot. Gal Gadot?
Sure.
The foxy, tall, leggy yeah. brunette.
I can't remember her name in the movie.
Giselle.
Yeah.
In an early scene...
Are these spoilers?
This isn't a spoiler. Okay. Because it's like a henchman she kills.
Yeah.
But it's like, they're in this location, and the henchmen come to get them, and they're like firing and firing, and finally, like, they start to run away. And this one very deliberate scene, she takes aim and just kills this guy.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that seems odd, because no one else has killed anyone. Like, they're not murderers, you know? And then there's it's a spoiler at the very end... One of the most hilarious deaths, I think, in recent... And hilarious in a good way. Like, it's,
yeah,
like,
no, it's great.
Crazy.
It's great. The movie earns its moments, you know? Yeah. And a lot of movies don't do that. I've complained about that with some other summer movies. And here's where I seem like a hypocrite, because I think you could probably make a strong case that Iron Man 3 and Star Trek Into Darkness are better, more sound movies, you know? And again, maybe it's just about expectations. I... read comic books growing up, so maybe I have or I have higher expectations for Iron Man, or I like Star Trek, so maybe I have higher expectations, like, and for Fast and Furious, it only needs to be exactly what it was, which was insanely dumb and, like, so much fun.
I'll amend that. I don't think it needs to be yes, the emotions have to be the same.
Yes.
I mean, like, you want to have fun and to be dumb and exciting. But, I mean, if this was just a rehash of the fifth movie, I don't know if we would have laughed.
And I agree.
Yeah.
I do think, like, they know what they're doing. I don't think it's just a fluke. Because when we say it's dumb, we mean it's, like, it's preposterous, and it's... the characters are all posturing, and the jokes are kind of stupid. But, like, I don't think it's a stupidly made movie. I think it's a very smart...
Strategic, almost.
Yeah, I think Justin Lin is a very smart director.
What else has he done besides the last four of these movies?
Your favorite movie, Annapolis. And he made a movie called Better Luck Tomorrow in the early 2000s. That's good.
American?
People should check it out. He is not.
Okay.
He's an Asian fellow. Yeah, you guys should see Better Luck Tomorrow.
That's racial.
And then he made Annapolis. And then he's just made Fast and Furious movies.
So what's his next step?
I don't know for sure.
The Saw series is coming into direct.
Yeah. I don't know for sure. I know he's been courted, especially after Fast 5 hit.
Or Star Wars?
Can you imagine
a James or when Justin Lin directed Star Wars?
I would see that. I know they were, after Fast 5 was a big hit, they were courting him to do the new Terminator sequel. It's just like,
oh,
why?
Yeah,
we just have to hand guys, like, a new franchise? Just let him go make a new movie.
Yeah.
Why does he have to just take over this other thing?
Yeah.
But he directs the hell out of this movie, and I think it's a very intelligently made, stupid movie, if that makes sense.
I think the fifth movie was also a little crisper, though, in how it was shot.
Okay.
And maybe I have to rewatch the fifth one, Fast 5. I so wish, by the way, this movie, I want to say, I'm 99% sure this movie is called Fast and Furious 6.
Yes.
The title card in this movie is Furious 6.
Yes.
That should be the name of the movie.
Correct.
Or Fast 6. Or something like, we get it. We don't need all the words right. to explain what this movie is. It could be called like FF6.
And I wonder if it's a marketing thing that Furious 6 people wouldn't know what that was, but why Fast 5 could pass, but Furious 6
couldn't.
And the
hashtag, this is so stupid, but the hashtag on Twitter that was like the movie was putting out was hashtag Fast 6.
That's just all over the place. Come on, marketing people.
Right. Anyway,
get it together.
I feel like the fifth movie, which I'm just going to compare the two of these, because they seem like more in the same camp than the previous four.
Definitely.
It was brighter, and I mean that in two ways. One is that it was, I think, more...
Took place in daylight.
Yeah, more daytime sequences. Yeah. Right. And just a brighter, and like more, I can't, just feel.
Well, because this is like Fast and Furious Into Darkness.
Yeah, more Khan in this movie, which is why Patrick doesn't like it.
Yeah, I think the fifth one maybe is a little bit better shot also because there's less action, which sounds ridiculous, but some of the action in this movie gets so frenetic that you lose...
It's a little crazy.
You lose a sense of, I mean, the climax... there were times in the big set piece at the end, I don't think this is a spoiler, and we're going to get into spoilers in just a minute, when bad guys would die, I think that's okay to say, some bad guys die, they would die, and you wouldn't know it, because like you almost couldn't follow what was going on. And that's partially because it's shot and edited so fast, but it's also partially because during that climax, I mean, the movie's juggling, like, 10 different balls at the same time because you have so many different characters all trying to do, like, a different thing.
Yeah. I'll say two things about that real fast. Yeah. I think that the action was kind of crazy, frenetic.
Yeah.
Is a great word to describe that. I feel like the camera was a foot too close almost every time it was, you know, like, an action sequence.
Yeah.
Like, if there's a fight sequence between, and this is in a trailer, between Gina Carano and Michelle Rodriguez.
Yeah.
The camera is so close that, like... Yeah. And there's a lot of cuts, and I know that we live in the day and age where there's tons of cuts. We're not going to escape that, but I just wanted to breathe a little bit, and it didn't quite breathe as much as I wanted it to.
Well, and we're spoiled a little bit, too, because of Haywire. Like, we want the camera to come back and show what Gina Carano can do.
Well, that's part of it, too,
and because she only gets a few seconds where she really shows a move. And, some of that may be to cover Michelle Rodriguez's limitations. I don't know.
I'm sure, honestly, I think that's got to be the case. Because Michelle Rodriguez is just an actress.
Right.
And Gina Carano is a former MMA fighter.
Right. And not an actress, as Fast and Furious 6 has demonstrated.
What are you talking about?
Everything
had this affectation.
I did not have a huge problem with her in Haywire. Like, I thought
she was effective. With this. She was great.
I thought she was effective in Haywire. Her line readings in this movie are...
You are crazy. No.
...are rough, but she's so super pretty that I don't mind.
Yeah, right.
Like,
The other thing I was going to say was I kind of made a mistake and I watched a featurette on HBO about this movie. I just wanted to get myself geared up because I didn't watch the previous five movies before this
movie. You should have.
I know I should have. I should have come over and watched it. What am I doing in California?
Yeah, it's so dumb. California's dumb.
I watched this 15-minute long featurette and it kind of spoiled some things for me, which I was like, oh, I shouldn't have watched this little vignette that got me geared up. However, it did get me excited, obviously, for the movie. My point is this. In the featurette, they show and explain that so much of the movie is practical. That tons of the cars flipping in one big set piece, a lot of cop cars flip over. They launch off this car and they flip over. And literally, in the featurette, they show you like the documentary camera filming the film of the thing, and cars are flipping over, and the tank is plowing through cars. My issue is that in the movie, it almost looked better in the documentary feed because it's like, let this breathe. When the car crashes through a window, like on its nose, and it's sliding through this plate glass window, it's such a dramatic, like, holy, that's like it defies physics, but it's broken up into six shots where I'm just like, oh, Justin Lin, you're so good. But I just wish it would, like, pull back a little bit, be a little brighter. And this might also be the theater we saw it in. I thought it was a little blurry, and that just might be the projectionist not having it bright enough.
It turns out that's just what Vin Diesel looks like at this point.
Drippy.
He's just a weird wax sausage figure. Man. He looks like the Toxic Avenger. I love the fact that the action is practical, because that is going away so much, and we've sort of railed about some recent summer blockbusters just being CGI spectacles. And I like CGI, it's fine.
CGI is fine when it serves a purpose.
But man, is it like when a real cop car flips, I want to clap because it's like, that was the coolest thing.
Right.
You try and ignore the fact that there's a human body in there. And
before the movie, we watched trailers, obviously, and Patrick...
I watched trailers with Doug.
Thank you. Before the film, they showed the trailers, and Patrick, we got there right when that started, so we want to get a pop. or a soda if you're from California.
Or anywhere but Chicago.
Patrick left because he had seen all the trailers before.
Yeah.
And I saw World War Z for like the fifth time. And I'm okay. I'm down for that movie. You're shaking your head now.
Not.
But there's a scene that's kind of famous from the trailer in World War Z where a gaggle, I believe zombies are grouped in gaggles.
A school of zombies.
Are overriding a bus and the bus flips over. And it does nothing for me. There's no gravity. There's no, it defies physics. I don't care. Even though they're zombies and they're supposed to look otherworldly, it just looks ridiculous.
I think part of it too is that the special effects, at least for me, and maybe they're not done, they look shockingly bad. And by the way, 10 years ago, they're amazing. They're state of the art. But like, we've come so far that they look terrible.
My point is when the bus flipped over and I saw these like CGI zombies, I actually try to like look to see like, I try to pick out like one to see how it looks, and it's like, it's just like jerky, like a cartoon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when this cop car flips over,
the
cop car, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are lots of like ridiculous effects that like, you know, there's wire work and stuff. I see Fast Six, but
The thing about, you know, we talk a lot during the summer months about, we want things to be fun and big, big summer entertainment. People,
this movie delivers.
It's a popcorn movie. You know, when I see the trailer for World War Z and it ends with like the side of an airplane ripping open and just innocent people being sucked out.
Oh, that's good.
Like by the dozens. I'm like, I don't want to go see that ever, much less like in the summer when it's like, hey, this is fun movie season.
You need to see fun stuff, right? Yeah.
I'm not saying every movie has to be fun. I'm not, but the way that they're choosing to sell that movie, because I'd much rather see Fast Five. And I want to say something real quick about the marketing of Fast Five and then Fast Six. Sorry, and then we'll get into spoilers. We talked about this on the Iron Man podcast, and I get it, like, marketing departments need to sell their movies.
And
so they do it.
They seem like they're outside the circle of creative.
So they do it by putting every big moment into the movie. So as much as I really had a great time in Fast and Furious 6, and it did show me things that I hadn't seen, but the majority of the really big moments have all been packed into the trailer.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, especially that last thing, how much more fun that would have been if it hadn't been spoiled in every trailer.
I'm not sure I know what you mean, but you'll explain
just
it.
Just the way that the last set piece resolves, what they accomplish.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Had we not seen that in every trailer, we would have been like, did you see what they just did? But it's in every trailer, and so that's a disappointment. Having said that, I mean, I didn't feel let down, but of course there's all these moments where I'm like, oh, but we still have to see this thing, because I'm playing it, I know what's coming in my head. Like, oh, we haven't seen this happen yet.
Burdened, my friend.
I am.
You are burdened.
By the trailers to Fast and Furious 6.
By life.
I say go see it. I would advise seeing the first five first.
Well, sure.
At least Fast Five. I think you can get pretty caught up if you see Fast Five.
They're a good coupling.
Also,
my favorite British sitcom, Coupling.
But this was the most fun I've had at a movie so far this year.
Wow.
I had a blast.
Yeah.
I had so much fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we'll talk spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Thank you, spoiler bot. I gotta say, I also love the opening credits. This is not a spoiler, but the opening credits are just like a greatest hits of the series thus far, and it's so much fun. It's like, I remember all these moments from this week when I watched them.
After reading your column, and I have not seen the previous five movies in a long time, but after reading your column, I was along for the ride, and the opening credit sequence after the first little introductory thing, which doesn't do, that scene, they could have done something.
Oh, the baby?
Like, yeah, there's like racing and there's a...
Here's why I sort of liked it.
Well, real quick, the opening credits, the credit sequence is a greatest... At one point, I looked over at you and you're just like smiling. Like, it is just like...
I remember all these things.
And they do look younger. It's kind of weird. I think that Paul Walker
especially.
But Paul Walker doesn't look old now.
No, but like he's aged into it and he's like cooler now.
Walker, I think we said this earlier, is like the best actor. I mean, Tyrese is the funniest and Tyrese and Ludacris have this natural...
Yeah.
Chemistry with each other, and just in life, I assume.
Right.
But Paul Walker is like, where did this Deedle come from? You know, have I met him before?
He has to carry some of the more emotional stuff in the movie, and he does a good job. He has a scene. He's just very natural in an early scene. And I turned to Doug and said, like, when did Paul Walker become the best in this movie? The opening scene. The reason that I kind of like it, the thing with the baby, and it's stupid, but like, Fast Four ends with them breaking Dom out of handcuffs on the bus. Like, he's on a bus to go off to prison, cut to Paul Walker and Jordana Brewster, or the skeleton that used to be Jordana Brewster. I'm not kidding, in this movie, and she's not in it that much. We're in spoilers, we can talk about it. She's not in it that much. When she was on the frame, I really thought, like, she has cancer. She has stage 3 cancer. She looks so... A stiff freeze would have
taken her right out the...
So unhealthy, like, skin stretched over a skeleton. So it ends with them pulling up alongside the bus, and we know they're going to break him out, right? So Fast 5 opens right at that moment, them breaking him off the bus. So it picks up right where the last one left off. So this one starts, and having just watched them all...
How does Fast 5 end?
This one starts with Paul Walker and Vin Diesel racing. I say diesel, and then I say raising. Racing.
Diesel.
And I remember, oh, right, Fast 5 ends with them about to race.
Again, a smart movie, right?
Saying, like, Paul Walker, go ahead and talk.
So Patrick is coughing right now. And,
talk about Fast 6, not about what's happening.
Are you okay? Drink your Monster energy drink that's been banned in different states.
So,
killing yourself.
Yeah. Quickly.
Oh, that's the plan? Damn it.
So
it opens up with them racing, and they go back to the kid.
And I thought, oh, this is picking up where the last movie left off. They're having that race. And I thought, oh, they're doing it again.
Yeah.
And yet the movie subverts it in just the tiniest way. They're racing to the delivery of Paul Walker's baby.
Yeah.
And again, that's not great or, like, smart, but it's smarter than you expect from this movie. I like little touches like that, that Justin Lin knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the villain, Owen Shaw, who's generic. And
he is. He's like a... In the featurette, he described himself as like a reverse James Bond.
Like, why do any of these douchebags try to pretend like they're playing a character?
The whole fucking featurette was like... So, Vin Diesel's on screen. By the way, his name is Vin Diesel. I'm like, I'm mad at myself for having to say the name that the only name I know him by. Yeah. But I know that's not his real name.
Right.
But he says, this movie opens with Dom. And he's like talking about his character in the third person.
He sounds like Kevin from The Office.
Oh my God, we just nailed Vin Diesel. Are you guys talking about what I think you're talking about? Why don't you go walk away, The Rock? I wasn't hiding.
Yeah. Sorry.
I never thought I'd trust a cop. That's not a very good Kevin, by the way, either.
But it's an excellent Vin Diesel.
Thank you. So, yeah, they definitely talk about themselves in the third person. What were you saying?
Just the villain. That he's sort of generic, and it almost doesn't matter, because the series has never had particularly good villains. I like Cole Hauser.
I can't even name
the second movie
a villain, really. I
mean, Cole Hauser. DK in Tokyo Drift.
He's the villain? I thought he was just the king of drifting.
The dude in the fourth movie... He shows up in this movie.
Yeah. I actually thought he lent, and I don't know that actor that well.
Yeah. He's in Silver Linings Playbook. He's in a bunch of stuff.
He lent an air of like he knew what he was doing in the scene he was in, I thought.
Well, he's a good actor.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. It's kind of like, oh, you are in this movie. Like, why can't it just be all like, just people, like literally you said before, people posturing. There's never a scene in which The Rock isn't just like flexing every muscle.
He looks ridiculous.
The only person who can make The Rock look like a pussy is future Rock. So Rock in 2005 is like, that guy's huge and strong. And then like Rock in Southland Tales, like, oh my God, he's so big. Right. The Rock now is like, I mean, he's definitely doing, he's juicing, right?
It's, I don't know.
He's effing Jose Canseco's wife.
Crazy. It's
in
crazy.
The drug hole.
The fifth movie has sort of the generic drug lord, like, what is the number to the phone in my car?
Wow, deep desperado.
Thank you.
El Mariachi.
No, it's desperado.
That's desperado? Like,
yeah. The thing that works in Fast 5 is that it also throws The Rock in, not as a villain, but like as an antagonist.
Sure.
And that works. And in this movie, again, he's kind of generic. The touch that I like that's never fully developed in this movie, and they call attention to it, that Shaw's team is like a weird... mirror universe team of the Fast team. I don't know. Do they have a name? The Wolfpack, I think.
The Wolfpack.
So you have like the flip side of the Rock character and you have they make a joke that the Paul Walker stand in is the blonde girl.
I laugh.
And I like that. And again, it's never quite developed in a way, but I like it tries to tie into, like, the themes of the movie, which is, like, this team's going to win because they stand by one another and they're about family. An evil team only seems to be about money, and that's why they're going to lose.
Well, the whole thread, aside from Dom, like, searching for Letty.
Yeah.
Letty?
Yeah. Letty.
Letty.
Letty. That, she has amnesia, by the way. That's the stupid hook of the movie.
I love that is, too. Just like, and I'm like, sure. Why not? Why wouldn't she have amnesia?
They didn't, like, go crazy with
it. Would she not have amnesia? Of course she has amnesia.
There are still too many scenes where, like, they zoom in on her. Not zoom, but, like, the camera just holds on her, and we can tell that she's, like, trying to figure out where her loyalties lie. Like, that happens too many times. But they didn't go crazy with the amnesia angle. Like, it's set up front, and then they kind of stop dealing with it.
Yeah, yeah. So the thread of the movie, though, is about... Like, and it's pretty overt. It's said out loud. It's about what your values are.
Right.
And the values of Vin Diesel as established in, like, the first movie is, like, family, 1324. You know, like, everything about Vin Diesel, aside from, like, the fact that he's not a nice person, that he's kind of, like, mean to his family, that he doesn't even, like Paul Walker.
You never turn your back on family.
But you never turn your back on family. Right. Even when they turn their back on you.
When they get amnesia and join the bad guys.
So that's the thing. That's the thread that, like, loyalty and family. And Shaw exploits it and says, like, because that's your weakness. And, of course, then he comes back with, like, at least I know how I'm going to die. My God.
We've blown this wide open.
Anyway, but it's like, yeah, it's pretty overt, pretty obvious, pretty on the nose, but it is the whole thing, and it's...
But I give the movie some credit for being about something. I'm not saying it's about anything great or, like, but at least it tries to have a theme, you know?
I want to touch on a couple quick things I mentioned in the pre-spoiler part. The death I was talking about at the end was the Gina Carano character, who turns out to be a double agent, a double crossing.
For basically no reason.
I mean, it makes no sense. I don't.
Well, Roger Ebert used to have this thing called the law of economy of characters. There's a character who's around, especially if it's a sort of recognizable actor, who seems to serve no function, chances are, like, there's some sort of twist, or they're gonna die, or, like... So when she turns out to be the mole, sort of, you're like, okay, I guess that's the only reason she's existed for the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
Because she's, like, kind of standing around with nothing to do, and you assume, like, well, they cast her just so she can, like, fight with Michelle Rodriguez.
Right, but
she's,
that's why.
She has nothing to do, and then they say, oh, she's a villain, at which point she kind of still has nothing to do.
Sure.
All it does is sort of explain, like, but not really, but they keep saying, like, how does Shaw know what we're going to do? Like, well, I guess this is how he has a mole, but...
Her death is on a plane in the very last sequence, and, by the way, there's a lot of harpoons in this movie.
I feel like they have to, they want so badly to set up how they take down the plane, and that's the thing that I was talking about pre-spoilers, like... If that wasn't given away in all the trailers, if this movie ended with them taking on a plane and you didn't know that was going to happen at some point in the movie, you'd be like, holy shit, they took down a plane.
The crazy thing is, though, it's not just the plane with the harpoons. It's the tank with the harpoons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's the roadblock with the harpoons.
But they spend a ton of time,
it's, like, a lot of metal
setting
things.
Up the tensile strength of harpoons so that apparently we can buy it when they take down the plane. Because otherwise I would have been like, well, that's not possible.
That tensile strength. You know where I learned the word tensile strength, by the way?
No.
Three Kings.
Oh.
Ice Cube's character.
Okay. Right?
Is that? Yeah. That's, who talks about the bags carrying the gold.
Okay.
He was a baggage handler in Detroit.
I sort of remember.
All right. I'm sorry. But just, it was like a word I remembered from a movie from 1999.
Well, it paid off.
And it's like tensile strength. Because Ice Cube educates me.
That's right.
Like, that's why I know that there's no good cops. And boom, that was... No, that's Ice-T. Boom, that was my shotgun. So that death is, like, ridiculous that, Michelle Rodriguez takes a harpoon and harpoons her square in the chest and she flies out the plane and it's like, what the fuck?
It's pretty great.
However, I will say, and I'm a big fan of, I don't need deaths to be ridiculous set pieces. I don't need a person launched, like, in Death Wish 3, but, like, he's killed with a rocket launcher, you know? It doesn't need to be that, but I do want the death to be good. For the villain.
Sure.
And I actually thought the death of the main villain, Shaw, in this movie, was a little like...
He just got, like, sucked off the plane, right?
Yeah, and the plane was only off the ground, so he just hit the cement, and, like, we assume he's just, like, cracked his head open or something.
He landed on top of Gina Carano.
Or on top of Gal Gadot.
Oh, so long. And that bums me out.
That bums me out, too, because she's cute.
She is cute. And I love the way that the movie established, like, the little unit inside of the unit. Like, I love that her and Han are this weird little team.
So Han's thing is he's always eating, team. Right?
Yeah, they sort of establish in Fast Five that he had just quit smoking. But I do like that he's always eating. And then I like Tyrese.
The cake is coming. He's like in the background eating sunflower.
And I wonder if that's just because somebody watched Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11. Like, well, let's do that. But it just makes him cool. Like, Han is the coolest.
Yeah.
And I love that Tyrese at one point is, like, asking him for food because it's been established in part two that he's constantly saying, like, I'm hungry. And so there's, again, just these dumb little character bits, but I appreciate that they try and pay them off.
Sure.
I am not a fan in any way of Elsa Pataky,
okay,
who played a cop in Fast Five, and who's very much written out of this movie because at the end of Fast Five, it's suggested that her and Vin Diesel are going to hook up, and this movie opens with them naked in bed together. They have been a couple, and then as soon as she finds out that Letty's alive, she's like, yeah, go do what you got
to
do.
It is the most perfect, I can't even explain to you. It's like, oh my God, I've hooked up, like my girlfriend's dead in a movie and a half, she's been dead, and I'm with this new hot chick in Canary Islands. I found out she's alive. Like, how do we, if I'm a screenwriter, how do I solve this problem? Have the character go up to the character and say, you probably should go. I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
We're good, right?
But again, and this is something that I talked about with Fast Five.
Like, spiking, I'm talking too loud,
I appreciate that she's even in the movie, that they continue to acknowledge that, like, these people still exist, because so many sequels would just ignore the fact that that's how the movie ended. So they do bring her back at the beginning and the end, just to sort of explain, like, well, let's tie that up. Even if it's in, like, the laziest, most nonsensical way, they do tie it up, and I like that about these movies.
You told me that you knew the... There's kind of a tag after the movie.
Yeah.
Let's talk about
just
that.
Just like there was after Fast Five.
Right.
The Fast Five one was better.
Which one? I forget.
Fast Five is Letty's alive. Eva Mendes shows up, and you're like, yeah, she was in part two. And she pulls out the picture, and Letty's alive.
Okay. So in Fast Six, there's a tag. It's not post-credits. It's right before the credits, but it's definitely established after the movie is over that this is the tag. Yeah.
It's after the Don't Try This at Home title card.
Right. Herein. So it's in Tokyo. Han has moved there because he made a promise to his now deceased girlfriend.
Yeah.
Man, it sucks because I really did like those two characters.
They were awesome.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's just, again, the economy of whatever that, like, we need to get rid of something and raise the stakes.
They do have to raise the stakes. And at some point, I guess, it's like, yeah, one of these people probably would die, right? They're not going to kill Paul Walker. They're not going to kill Tyrese.
Might kill the baby, Jack. Anyway, so...
Kill Mia.
Han is back in Tokyo.
Mia?
Right, well...
What does she do?
Han is back in Tokyo, made a promise to Giselle. And he's street racing, and a car comes out of nowhere and smashes into him. He's wounded, and then the guy blows up Han, and Han's dead.
Which is a scene from Tokyo Drift. Like, Fast 6 has now caught us up to Tokyo Drift.
So the person that is in the old Mercedes that kills Han is, it's the reveal, and this is a spoiler, but it was kind of spoiled for a lot of people, I guess. You had known
that. Yeah, I knew about this.
It's Jason Statham.
Yeah.
Who normally I would like, I'm like, oh, cool, he should have been Shaw. Or I don't know, he could have made Shaw a little deeper, but... I guess my question is Lucas Black ever coming back?
I don't know. Now that they're caught up, he may, because they do seem sort of obsessed. There's a little bit of a discussion about
that. What's the
relationship
of Lucas Black to anyone?
Nothing.
Is that even a cousin of Paul Walker?
Nothing. No.
Okay. I thought there was something like that.
He was friends with Han.
Didn't he run the Naked Mile?
And Tokyo Drift ends with Vin Diesel in Tokyo. So Han dies about halfway, two-thirds of the way through Tokyo Drift. Boo. I love Han, and then the movie ends, and then the last scene is Vin Diesel showing up in Tokyo, and he's racing with Lucas Black. So now that we're in Tokyo, and Han is gone, we're caught up to speed. There's a chance that Lucas Black will be featured
in... It seems more organic if they...
Fast 7.
I would...
The way they brought back literally every other character...
I would hope that they would, because it's like that guy...
Including the bad guy from Fast and Furious 4, like...
Okay, a dumb question. Han, how did he survive? I forget, Tokyo Drift. How does he survive the crash in Tokyo Drift?
He doesn't.
What do you mean?
He's dead. In Tokyo Drift, he's dead.
But how's he come back?
Because these movies take place before Tokyo Drift.
What?
Yeah.
Am I dumb?
I don't know.
Well known?
Yeah. Because he keeps referencing, like, we're going to Tokyo. Because at the end of Fast Five, Giselle is, like, laying in his lap. And she says something about, like, let's go to Tokyo. And he says, we'll get there. We'll get there. And I'm thinking, no, don't get to Tokyo. Because when you get to Tokyo, you're going to die. And then today...
Is this movie brilliant?
When he was saying something about going to Tokyo. And I kept saying, like, no, Tokyo sucks. Because I knew that's where he dies.
Okay, I am the dumbest person on this
There's
podcast.
No reason for the chronology to be crazy. But...
I had no idea. I literally thought it was just a
chronological. It goes 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, Tokyo Drift.
That's crazy. And of course they wouldn't bring Lucas Black then in for these movies.
Correct.
Because he doesn't exist
yet. He doesn't exist yet. But in the next movie, he
okay,
may.
I am so
dumb.
So
we're now caught up to Tokyo Drift.
I had no idea. I thought Han died and whatever. So, okay. No. So then the Giselle character, what was her first movie?
She showed up in 4.
Okay, and Eva Mendes was in 2.
Yes.
Tyrese was in 2. Where did Ludacris show up?
2.
How come Ja Rule isn't back? I think
he died
in 1.
I don't think he died, no.
He crashed his car. He goes, oh, shit!
Yeah, but I think he's fine. No, does anybody die in 1? I don't think anybody does.
DVD format dies in 1.
Even Vince makes it through 1. He doesn't bite it till Fast 5.
And
little Vince shout out in the opening credits of this movie, by the way.
Refresh my memory. The character, the cop who escorts Paul Walker to prison.
Yeah, he was in 4 also, and
not
Paul Walker broke his nose. No.
This is like a fan service for 4, and the 4 is the one I know the least.
That's what I was surprised by, was how much of this movie, because it all deals with the Letty stuff, I was surprised by how much it tied into...
I know you're a Michelle Rodriguez fan. I know you like her midriff in Machete, and Machete Kills.
Yeah.
She doesn't do anything for me.
No,
so
she's
like,
not a very good actress, but I think she's attractive.
I do like it when she has war paint on her plane in Avatar.
That's how they know it's me. That's how they know which one to shoot at. Like, no, dummy, don't put the war paint on, and maybe you'll make it another half hour.
Can we talk about Avatar? This is our last podcast.
I had said earlier that some of the sequences don't really go anywhere, and we had said that the structure is like, okay, let's go do this thing, and then back to mission control, and then let's go do this thing.
The lair, please.
Yeah.
The wolf pack lair.
So there's a scene where, like...
The wolf den.
Vin Diesel gets shot with a bullet, and then they're like, we find out who made that bullet, and you'll find out where Shaw is, which is a reach.
Right.
So they go, and they find out, like, hey, who bought this bullet? And the guy's like... basically describes Letty, but she's the one who fired the bullet into Vin Diesel, so we've learned nothing new.
It's a very odd set piece in that they go to a pawn shop, and it's like, it's explained way too much, like, London, they don't have guns in London, so this specific pistol only has one bullet, so you gotta find the bullet. They go to a pawn shop, this is the right pawn shop, yes, Letty bought this, yes, we're leaving now, you don't know where she is, right? No, we do not know that, have that information.
So we still haven't found Shaw,
right?
Don't worry, he'll come to us in 20 minutes.
We're gonna have a gun on him, but we're not gonna shoot him. In one scene, Shaw shows up. Well, you've seen this if you're listening to this part of the podcast. It's spoilers. He shows up, and I get that if Shaw dies, Vin Diesel dies, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too.
It's just like he had the Rock standing, flexing the gun, could have killed Shaw, but let him get away.
The way more egregious sort of circular plotting is there's a whole sequence where Paul Walker has to go meet with Braga because somehow he's working with Shaw,
God,
which is barely established.
And bullshit.
So he has to go back to the United States, where he's a wanted man, get into prison, talk to Braga, and then get back out. Otherwise, he's going to stay there forever.
What did he gain by talking to Braga?
That's the point. Like, that sequence tells us nothing. It tells us nothing.
There's a funny thing. We made the joke during the
movie. Tells us what happened to Letty, but we already fucking knew what happened to Letty. We knew it, except all we didn't know was that the guy didn't shoot her. He shot the car, and it exploded, and she flew away. That's the only new piece of information we received.
It's fascinating, too, because Paul Walker feels like it's his fault because he got Letty killed.
Right.
And so, but he didn't get her killed, but he got her hooked up with these bad people, so it's his fault.
He put her undercover, and then she died.
So he goes back there, and I guess for peace of mind, he gets peace of mind.
Right.
He stabs Braga a couple times with a shiv, and like, that was actually, I like that.
Yeah.
That whole scene, actually, I thought was, the fight in the cell was, I thought was really good.
Yeah. Paul Walker.
So he comes back, and then
he's a man.
Talks to Michelle Rodriguez and says, Letty, I just want you to know, I'm sorry. And she's like, oh, it's okay.
It's the equivalent of Elsa Pataky being like, no, you go.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't remember it, but I'm sure it's cool.
Yeah, and he's like, I made the joke about it. I'm like, so we're cool now, right? Like, we're okay? Like, oh, big weight off my mind. It's so silly.
It's this weird tie back to Fast and Furious 4, and it again, it gains, it doesn't get us anywhere, because even sort of the one piece of information that Paul Walker gets, which is like, if you find Shaw, it's only because he wants you to find him, right? Or something like that. Like,
yeah.
And all that tells us is later Paul Walker kind of figures out that, like, he's going to hit the convoy. But even that doesn't really resolve the story. Like, it's not... None of what happens during the prison excursion really pays off in any way. And no. All it does is kind of break up the team, which, you know, I never like.
I'm confused as to what the convoy was also. They're trying to find a chip, so they move...
But the chip was in the tank?
I don't know.
I don't either.
The chip was in a metal briefcase, and they... attack the convoy, and all of a sudden they're like,
there's a tank inside.
Commandeering a tank.
But
they all know how to drive it too. At one point, it's so funny. At one point, Shaw is like, you get on the GPS.
Yeah.
And she starts punching buttons like I would punch buttons.
I thought the same thing. Like, when did she learn? She can't remember.
When did she learn tank mapping?
She can't remember Dom, but she knows how to work a tank. But again, the way the movie is structured is it sets up all this stupid shit. And as soon as you want to say, like, wait, what's the deal, and why is this happening, and who wants what? You don't care, because there's this long, crazy chase on a freeway with race cars and a tank.
And I liked it, because it was also shot in the day.
Yeah.
So it was bright, you could actually see, and you could kind of follow what was going on, too.
Yeah.
And that perfect segue brings me to the most ridiculous action moment of the movie, in which Patrick and I, probably alone in the theater, were laughing so loud, but everyone else was cheering, but... our laughter was, in a way, a cheer.
Yeah, right.
At one point, Shaw is basically writing off Michelle Rodriguez. Like,
yes.
Get on the tank, fix the thing. I don't know why Tyrese had to put the cable around it. Didn't make any smoke. Like,
he was anchoring the car.
But that was established later. That was a convenient coincidence. So get on the tank, get outside and take the thing off. And then he's like, while you're up there, watch your boyfriend die. And then he like basically just says, I'm sacrificing you for it.
Yeah.
And she gets thrown
off. She puts war paint on the tank.
She does. And she's going to hunt Navi. And then she gets launched off the tank. I'm not sure exactly how. Probably the same way that the Kirk and Khan get launched out of the little pod. Like, how do they get launched? By the way, how do they get launched out of that pod to go across the debris field? Like, what's the trajectory?
They knelt down. Right. So maybe they ran.
Was there something behind them pushing them? With ghosts?
They have the two spray cans, like My Secret Identity. They actually kind of do.
You'll never guess My Secret Identity. Okay, so she's launched off the tank, at which point Dom is like, and then he crashes his car.
Superman.
He jumps out of the car. They catch each other midair, which, by the way, the speed at which they're traveling, they would have, like, sliced each other in half.
Yeah.
And then he catches her, and they fall on a car. Which is it looks ridiculous, it is ridiculous, it sounds ridiculous, everything about it is ridiculous. I want to jump ahead real fast to a scene in which Michelle Rodriguez confronts him and she says, how did you know there was a car there to break our fall? Time out. And by the way, his next line is, I didn't. You have to go on faith.
Why couldn't he just say, like, I didn't? Like, that's a fun, it's a stupid line, but it's fine.
You have to go on faith.
Because it's Vin Diesel, there always has to be, like, you always land on cars with family. Like, he always has to tie it back into his bullshit code.
You always land on car with my family? By the way, the statement,
the worst.
How did you know a car was there to break my fall? A car is the last thing that's going to break my fall ever. These sound like nitpicks, and we're not being negative because the movie
is
so
fun.
Oh my god, it's so. But it's like, it's so. I'm laughing like, what a buck.
Yeah.
It's like, how'd you know that cinder block was there to break my as serve as a pillow? Like, that's the opposite of what actually happened. And at that point, he's a Superman. He's flying through.
No, they're all superheroes. They're again. So the movie has these big, dumb, broad strokes, and I promise we'll wrap up soon, but it also has these little small things that I like, and that's why I think it's a little bit better than just the traditional dumb action movie. Not only is, like, the scope and scale bigger, but when Paul Walker's trying to knock the Mustang off the bridge so that it will anchor the tank and stop it...
Makes sense.
This is a thing that has to be accomplished in the movie. It takes a couple tries. Like... I like that it took a couple tries to get the car over the bridge. That usually doesn't happen in movies. He's like, oh, I know what I'll do. Boom. And they knock it over and it's fine. Also, earlier you were talking about the scene where they give way too much detail about, like, these are Ikaluga bullets. Like, that's a weird Heather's reference.
Yeah. That is definitely.
So, that's lame, but, like, it sort of calls back to Paul Walker being a cop. I actually really like the first time Vin Diesel throws down the picture of Letty, Paul Walker's immediate reaction is like, I used to do that shit all the time when I was a cop. Like, these guys are being assholes. I like that they, again, acknowledge, oh, right, he used to be a police officer. Like, it's still a part of his character. I like that. There's little touches like that throughout the movie that I like. Let me talk about the worst scene in the movie real quick, because there's a lot of sort of quote-unquote funny lines in the movie that we don't laugh at. We kind of roll our eyes. The rest of the audience cracks up. There's one scene,
however, we're better than everyone else.
That's more tone-deaf than any scene in any of the Fast and Furious movies, I think. And it's a scene that's played for laughs, and it's Ludacris and Dwayne Johnson go to get some cars. I don't even remember for what. Like,
they need better cars to chase down the people, because they have BMWs that were not good enough.
And that's the thing. Cars. It's like, I don't find myself ever questioning the movie's logic. I don't need to. I don't care. Like, it just washes over me. And so they meet with this, like, snotty
auctioneer
British auctioneer. And he goes on this racist tirade against Ludacris. Like, you're not a baller. You don't have gold chains. It's supposed to be funny. It's so tone deaf. To me, it felt right out of a Michael Bay movie. Like, in a Michael Bay movie, that guy exists and says hateful, racist shit because that's how Michael Bay sees the world. There's never been a scene like that in any of these movies. So, to me, that scene felt very out of place.
I'm trumping you right now by saying the next scene is worse.
Where they get him undressed.
Where they get him undressed. Okay, so the punishment, at the end of the scene where they, like, the guy belittles them and they feel shamed.
Right.
By this guy. They say, we have to get this guy back. So, what they do is they buy the cars because Ludacris is a millionaire.
Why couldn't they just steal the cars? Like, at least after that stupid tirade, I thought that the punchline was going to be Dwayne Johnson saying, like, okay, steal the cars.
Yeah. So in the next scene, the auctioneer comes to their house, and he gives them their cars, and then they say, give us your shirt. And he's like, it won't fit. And he's like, yes, it will. Gives him the shirt. And then he's like, give me your pants.
Yeah.
Gives him the pants, and then he's like, goodbye. And that scene ends.
All that shit is right out of a Michael Bay movie.
And The Onion this week had a joke thing about an interview with the screenwriter, in quotes, of Fast and Furious 6, who is a five-year-old. And to me, that scene is like, how do we get this guy back? We take his clothes.
Make him get naked.
Oh my God, if this guy, like, he's like a real adult. And he's like a respectable guy. If we take his clothes, that's the ultimate humiliation. It's so stupid.
It is really stupid.
And kind of weird, like, this
doesn't need to be in the movie, I mean, there's a million ways they could have just gotten cars. They've, like, never had a problem getting cars before in a movie, so why that needs to be.
If they could get 24 computer monitors that have beeping and orange dots.
And if those scenes existed as, like, deleted scenes on the DVD, I would watch them and say, like, those are horrible. That was smart to cut those, and I really wish that they would have, because they stand out from the rest of the movie in a bad way.
I know Dwayne Johnson now is part of the crew.
Yeah.
Do you think, at this point, in Fast 5, he served a better purpose than this movie.
Yeah.
In the next movie, I don't know if I want to see him.
Like, no, he can probably step out now.
But he won't probably, right?
I don't know. I think he could. I think they sort of closed his loop, you know? I mean, they kind of, well, no, they actually didn't after Fast 5. He basically says, like, I'll give you a head start. I'm coming for you. So it does sort of, but this movie definitely kind of closes.
At the end, there's a weird bro acknowledgement, like, hey, like, anytime you need help. It's also like, I felt bad for, because I like Dwayne Johnson, as most people do. He's got charisma. And he can be really funny and self-effacing. But in this movie, he's like, he's kind of the dumb guy and kind of the meathead.
Yeah, I mean, he's capable, though. He's never shown to be incompetent.
Well, he's the one.
But he needs Vin Diesel.
He is incompetent, though, because he's the one that's like, put him on a convoy. And it's like, no. And Paul Walker is like, that's just what they'll want. Like, Paul Walker outsmarts.
You're playing right into their hands, bruh.
Right. How about the fight scene at the end, though, too?
I wanted to get to that because the whole point of, like, Mirror Universe Fast 6 team, like I say, it's never totally exploited. Except at the very end, they have a giant on their team.
Which is like Magnus von Magnussen. He's like the world's strongest man, right?
I don't know if that really is.
No, I don't. That's a joke. Oh, that was like the guy that was like the strongest man in the 90s.
He's a monster.
I mean,
he's crazy.
He's the Hulk. He looks like the Hulk without like the CGI Hulk.
Right. Yeah. He's a giant. And at the end of the movie, he's fighting Vin Diesel, and I'm like, this is bullshit, because I still can't even buy the Vin Diesel fight with Dwayne Johnson in Fast Five. Well, right. Like,
he first fights Paul Walker for a bit, and Paul Walker gets a couple punches in. It's like, nope!
Barely. And he, like, picks Paul Walker up off the ground and throws him, which is how it would go, you know?
Yeah.
But then Dwayne Johnson shows up, and it's this great reveal, and you could hear the audience, like, get excited, because that whole mirror universe thing essentially exists to get us to that point the monster can fight the monster.
Right.
And it's fucking worth it, because the punchline of that scene is one of the best moments in the movie.
Yeah, Vin Diesel comes from behind and picks up the villain monster, and then Dwayne Johnson does a leaping, like, clothesline.
Once again, just somebody jumping from one place to another and just fucking snaps his neck.
That scene was shot really well, I think. Like, I could, there's a geography I understood.
Yeah.
In one of the first sequences, The Rock, is he still The Rock? He's Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
I'm calling him The Rock.
Yeah, that's
the he's Rock. In, he's interrogating, in quotes, a villain in the Interpol. So, in this scene, he's in the interrogation room. He approaches the guy. We think it's Vin Diesel, but it's not, obviously. Right. And then he beats the crap out of him.
Right.
But again, in this featurette, I ruined it for myself. He literally does clean and jerk a guy off the ground. Like, he grabs him, pulls him up, and pushes him into the ceiling. No wire work. That's Dwayne Johnson. It's in four
he's
shots.
A monster.
Like, Justin Lin, you gotta, like,
step
back a little bit.
Right.
He's a monster, you're right.
And I do kind of like the way that they flip the Gina Carano, Michelle Rodriguez thing, because they have a long fight, and some of it's kind of cool. It works because it's being intercut with Han and Tyrese taking on the dude from the raid, and it's like a pretty cool.
That's
long,
the guy from the raid, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a pretty cool, like, hand to hand.
He is literally the fastest. Like,
and his death kind of sucks. And again, it's one of those where you're like, did he die? I can't tell.
I didn't even know he died.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I assume they all died.
The way that it's handled at the end is not great. During that fight, obviously, you want Gina Carano to win, just because Michelle Rodriguez, even though she's Letty, she's a villain, you know, at that point in the movie, and Gina Carano's a cop, and she's Gina Carano, so you want her to win. And then by the end of the movie, they've switched places, and all of a sudden now you're on Michelle Rodriguez's side, which
it's interesting. Yeah.
It works, the way that they flip your emotions.
I thought that tube fight scene, too, was pretty, like, I thought it was done pretty well.
It was, yeah.
When she, like, Michelle Rodriguez is, like, fighting for her life, basically, so she, like, tackles her, and they fall downstairs, and it's, like, it's pretty good, but
And again, it's smart the way that it sort of lays out having different kinds of action sequences. You know, they've never really had an extended sort of hand-to-hand fight scene in any of these movies, so it's smart to do one.
Man, this whole time I'm thinking about Han's death. This whole time you're talking, I'm thinking about the movie Fast and Furious is kind of brilliant.
Thank you. This is what I've been trying to tell people for about 2 years. It was really only when Fast Five came out that I, like, reassessed everything. And was like, these movies are good. By the way, like, four of them are good. Like, I don't love Tokyo Drift for reasons other than just because it kills Han. And I really don't like Fast and Furious. I like the first one. I like the second one. I like Fast Five. And I really like this one. So it's not even I love every entry in the series, but I just, it's crazy. The continuity, the way that it's advancing this ridiculous story and where it has gone from where it started to them taking down a jet.
Right. Oh,
and just being a super team now. I love it. And I'm excited.
That was a good death. He threw the guy in the engine.
That was Han. That was Han being pissed at the guy who killed Giselle. Yeah. Like, that's pretty badass. But you didn't see the blood spatter out Die Hard 2 style.
Oh, my God. Just in the, like, the vent.
So now you assume they're all going to go to Tokyo to fight Jason Statham, which I'm down for.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
And then space.
And then, I'm not kidding, by part 10, they need to be in space.
And then they need to go to hell, I think, to fight the devil.
I'm 100% with you.
Just a complete fantastical, like...
I'm fine.
It's basically
send them back in time. Like, one of them steals a time machine, and they...
It's become Bogus Journey at this point.
I'm fine with it. Send this team anywhere. Leave Mia behind. Bring back Han. The thing that bums me out, and
I've said this... Bring back Eva Mendes. She's good to look at.
She is, yeah. And bring back Giselle. Like, Giselle was cool. Like,
I did, yeah. She, like,
when they're on the fucking motorcycles on the freeway chase, like, that's awesome. Yeah. That was super well shot, too. I've said this before, probably on the Fast Five podcast, but, like, if they could bring back Letty, I always felt like, couldn't they bring back Han? Like, he snuck out of the car before it exploded or whatever, but now the end of this movie really kind of cements, like, no, he is, in fact, dead, especially because they've killed off Giselle. which I'm assuming is, you know, that's their way of like, well, now they're both gone, so nobody's sad about losing the other one, you know. So, and now there's stakes, of course, because Jason Statham killed one of their guys, and so whatever, but...
Up until that point, Vin Diesel has never lost a man of his, a crew member.
Vince, and, like, at least one guy in the first movie. I know. The guy who, like... backs out of giving his car, his dad's car. He's like, oh, I'm sorry, Dom, I fucked up. And then he gets shot and killed in the street. Do you remember this?
No.
He's like the mouse character.
Yes. His mouse.
I believe is his name. He dies. So Vin Diesel loses a lot of
anyway, don't be on Vin Diesel's crew.
Fast and Furious 6.
It's so funny because the world, it's a fun world to visit. Like, if you really think
but
about...
But I wouldn't want to live there.
No, but it's like, I like the characters, I like the movies. The funniest thing is, though, like, when I really think about, like, where the fuck are they living? Like, who are they? Like, they're running from the... Like, this is a horrible existence.
Yeah.
There's one scene...
It was now they're back home, so it's fine.
But that's... house is horrible. Like,
well,
I don't
they need to
there.
Cut the grass. They've been away for years.
There's one scene where... I remember this. I forgot which movie. I think it was 4. Where Paul Walker's an FBI agent with the thing in his ear at the funeral. And Vin Diesel's posing in front of an oiled derrick. And I'm like, what? No, I don't want to be anywhere near these guys. They live depressing, miserable lives.
Yeah. Yeah, but they have family.
And loyalty.
First one to eat says grace. And Vin Diesel walks through fire in this movie. I'm so annoyed that, like, everybody is sort of self-deprecating in these movies except for Vin Diesel. And it's like, he can only ever be super cool. And I, once upon a time... thought Vin Diesel was kind of interesting as an actor.
Because he made interesting movies.
But he just does this one thing now, and every line is delivered the same way. He has one expression. It's like, he is the least interesting part of these movies, and they are built around him. And that is very frustrating.
It's fascinating, though, too.
Yeah.
Because just imagine...
It's like fascinating and furious.
Fascinating? Just imagine if in Furious 7, if Vin Diesel made a joke about himself, I would be like, yes!
Right.
Like,
yeah, lighten him up a little.
He needs to be lightened up. That's the only kind of improvement I could suggest to the movie. Like,
that's it.
You seem to know what you're doing, Fast and Furious.
Bring back Han, even as a ghost. I'm fine with, like, ghost Han.
He's like,
this
like
is how you slowly, this is how you slowly work in the supernatural element.
So that eventually they fight Nosferatu.
Isn't it like Vin Diesel always has ghost Han in the riding shotgun? Like, giving him advice and, like, telling him, just explaining Tokyo culture.
Right. This is called sashimi.
This is where they need to go. James Wan, you heard it. You're the fucking horror guy. You made ghost movies. You made Insidious. Like, you're the guy to introduce Ghost Han.
Ghost Han. I like it. Korean water Ghost Han.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Go see Fast and Furious 6.
It's
make
dumb
it a huge hit.
And fun, and God bless fast cars. We'll be right back.